Totally Football Show today. Call it a comeback. Man United blow minds with blue rinse Pogba. City not taking their chances. Sterling, man who's fathered at least 16 children, no stranger to leaving glaring misses. What will it mean for the Champions League? Will Tuesday's Liverpool clash see another dose of Pepto-Bismol from City? And what of the other half-settled quarterfinals? We'll be talking that, Europa League, tight top four races, Burnley, Newcastle, and much more in this Totally Football Show. Easy Preesey.
Morning, James.
Foxy Coxy.
Hello, James.
Rafa the Gaffer.
Hi.
And Dr. Tom Markham, author of an analysis of the performance of football managers and their impact on the value of English football clubs.
Correct.
All right, Tom.
Very good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. Nice to see you all on a day which promises to be rich in comment, especially after that weekend in Manchester. Hey, David Preece?
Yeah, very much so, James. You're right.
A game of two halves. Why?
And a half-time chat.
What was the halftime? Okay, somebody here, who's this? GSS says, was Mourinho's halftime team talk, lads, it's City?
Well, it wasn't anything to do with tactics, by
was
all accounts.
Not?
Well, by all accounts, I think it was come out. It was Carrick and Herrera have come out and said that there was no tactics talk, there was no sort of formation changes, it was just purely inspirational chat.
Supposedly he did his clown talk.
Which, of course, you couldn't have done before the game. It was a real innovation at half-time. Strange. I think if you take away the sense of the occasion, I think this was perhaps one of those games where, as a team, you completely outplayed. You're lucky to go in with the deficit still being of the non-embarrassing kind, and you just think, basically, we've been given a chance here. We've been left alive. They should have killed us. Let's go for it. It happens sometimes, I think, when a team is so outplayed that they just feel, you know what, let's show them in the second half. Let's go for it. And of course, the occasion mattered, I think, ultimately more to City. I think for them, the nerves and the sense of kind of powerlessness, helplessness almost, kicked in at some stage, which was strange.
Yeah, I mean, the credit could go, it has to go to United for coming back. Of course it does. But in that situation, they're in a no-lose situation. You know, it's quite common. I mean, I know it's not as common as what everyone would have you believe. You know, is it 2.5% or 3% of sides actually come back and win games from 2-0 down? But if you're not playing well as a team, and then you go two goals behind, the pressure's off you. You know, there's no fear
there.
It's
such a dangerous scoreline, right?
Did you just hear him? 2%.
Well, I think Paul Pogba obviously had a lot to prove as well, and there was a lot of chat, you know, with regard to him and potential moves before the game. So he really, really had to prove himself, and he did grab the game by the scruff of the neck.
Dr. Tom, you're very much in the loop. What's the story behind Pep's comments on Friday, pre the derby, that Mino Raiola had sought to offload Pogba to City?
Well, I think with something that we've discussed on the show before, that agents have such power now, and particularly the bigger agents, that obviously Mino is in that bracket. So I think there's so much going on behind the scenes in terms of these conversations. They want to make as much money as they can for their clients, but at the same time, they want to see them playing and they want to see them in the news, because there's so many other deals other than just the weekly paycheck that these players get. So they're getting, you know, all sorts of commercial deals from different companies. So the more headline inches and columns that they're involved in, the better from an agent's perspective.
So but Pep's interest in airing that story?
I'm not sure, because obviously we heard before that Mino Raiola wanted to hit him in a tunnel. So I don't know. Maybe he was trying to play the bigger man. I'm not too sure. Maybe the lads have an opinion on that.
I think it's the same as the City side. I think it got to him a little bit. There was no need for him to come out and say anything at all. And it just sort of pours gas on the
Pogba's performance on fire, field, though. Was there something that happened at halftime in terms of the way he was interpreting the game?
Well, he certainly pushed forward more in the second half. But that's partly because Manchester United got a grip in deeper positions and allowed him to do that. But I think if Pogba's going to become the player that everyone thinks he should become, it will be in that role as a goal scorer. I mean, he's only 25, Pogba. And if you look at the best goal scoring midfielders in the Premier League, likes of Lampard and Gerrard particularly, they weren't prolific when they were younger. You know, it was really about that age 25, 26, where they almost accepted that they were going to play almost as a, in Gerrard's case, almost as a second striker. And Lampard at the top, you know, given more freedom from that three-man midfield and really pushed on to become a goal scorer. I think that's what Pogba has to do, because I'm not sure he has the discipline or the patience. He doesn't have the sense that he's someone who can control the game for me, but he is a player who can provide moments in the final third, and that's what he did. And there were two very good goals. I mean, the first one, the delay to wait for Edison to go down, was excellent. The second one, he was the one who passed out to Sanchez. And the header was actually quite good, because he was slightly off balance and it was slightly to his left. I thought there were two really good finishes.
Mm. Gundogan's goal a bit special as well.
Well, I just wanted to come in on two things that that were just discussed. I think Pogba is not a midfielder. And I think the first coach who can work out a position where he doesn't have to play in midfield will get the most out of him.
Have a go, Rafa. Where would you put him?
I'd put him as a second striker, or as the guy in the hole, or, you know, as a number 10, but not really playing in a deep position. I think he is not disciplined enough to play an actual central midfield.
Did he not
he
do
looked
that
woeful
at Juve?
Without the ball yet again through large spells of the game, pointing at others to say, you know, you go now, you go and help me, rather than actually taking any control. And
do you think he's too selfish as a footballer to be able to control games?
I don't know if it's a case of selfishness. I think it's just not his, it's not his game. I think Gerrard was the same. I mean, Benitez never trusted him to play real in a central midfield position. He tried to play him up top as much as he could with holding midfielders behind him. And I think Pogba is a very similar case, perhaps even more so of a goal scorer. And, you know, as you score goals, whatever you say about Pogba's game, it's almost irrelevant, because when you score goals, everything else doesn't matter. You can have a bad game. Just look at Cristiano Ronaldo, just how many bad games he has. But it doesn't matter, because he scores goals. The other thing with Mino, I mean, I think the way I understood the press conference, Pep was asked about a comment that Raiola had made about him. I think this might go back to the Zlatan controversy about Pep not being this or Pep not being that. And then Guardiola basically cracked and felt, I'm making the point now that Mino Raiola is hugely hypocritical, because if I'm so bad a manager, why does he want his best client to play for me?
Right.
It was just very clumsily made, I felt. The problem with this is that I think Raiola was basically looking for an escape route, or at least doing what every agent of his size and stature would have done at a similar point, is to see where's the market. If this really does not work out for Pogba at Man United, if it doesn't work out between Pogba and Mourinho, where could he go? So I don't think that he necessarily said, you know, hello Man City, hello Pep, Pogba wants to play for you. Mm. We're offering him to him, but feelers were very well put out to loads of big clubs.
Right. Now, there's been a lot, as regards this result, and a terrific result for Man United, but admittedly it comes against a City side that wasn't playing its full strength team, had a lot of misses, possibly as a result in the first half, should, I think, have had a penalty in the second half. Before the game, the consensus seemed to be very much that Pep would be wise not to throw everything at this match, even though it was a Manchester derby, even though the title could have been won, because Tuesday night's more important. Now there's a lot of talk of how much impact this is going to have mentally on City, the fact of having two major defeats against two major rivals in a row. Is this going to unsettle them in ahead of probably their biggest game of the season?
I'm not a City fan, and it didn't make any difference to me what happened, really. But, you know, looking through from a different perspective, he could have just rested even more players. And then if City won, then it's an excuse. It's got no sort of, there's no consequence to right. to the next game either. And it's just like treat with a bit of disdain, really.
Sure, but he thought he could probably do both.
Yeah,
he could probably do both.
Yeah, I mean, he's a winner. Why wouldn't he think like, he's Pep Guardiola? Do you know what I mean?
But what do you think in terms of preparation for trying to come back from a 3-0 deficit? What do you think, Michael?
Not sure we'll have that much impact, to be honest. I mean, they played really well in the first half, having been embarrassed on the Wednesday night. So I think they've won enough games this season that they can get over that, personally.
I think the fact that it's nothing to do with Man City, really. I think it's the fact that he's given some power or some, I don't know, some sort of confidence to United. Because even if he just threw the game away and they won against a second string side, put Bravo in goal as well, it takes away. It's a nothing win. It doesn't mean as much to United now. People are talking as like a turning point, or it could change the way that United are going, because they weren't going in the right direction before this game.
Yeah, but they're 13 points behind. They're not going to win the title. They're out of the Champions League.
Yeah, but it's to do with next season as well. You know, it's leaving scars as well.
Mm.
What I would say is that the fact that they conceded 3 goals is almost more relevant than the result. I mean, they could have won 5-3 or whatever, but I think the fact that they didn't keep a clean sheet, that they looked so vulnerable again, that will play on their minds going into Wednesday's game. It's not the defeat as such, it's the sense of we can't really protect our goal well enough to get this massive win that we need. That's the bigger damage done.
I completely agree with Rafa there that you've got a situation where I think all of us could see City scoring 3+ goals, but their issue is defensively, and Liverpool are so sharp and they've so much pace going forward that you can't see them not scoring in that game.
Although, of course, they didn't on Saturday in the early game, the Everton clash, the Merseyside derby, in which Klopp's heavy metal was more kind of lift Muzak. I think I'm not sure how happy he'll be with that.
Very subdued.
The question, I guess, might revolve around Mo Salah. Again, for Liverpool, this clash, the Premier League clash, wasn't as important as Tuesday. But if Mo Salah's missing this week as well, how much is that going to blunt their edge?
Oh, hugely. I mean, he's their most important player, no doubt. And Liverpool don't have the depth in the squad that City have. And they don't have the depth in the squad that the other teams who are likely to go through in the Champions League will have. So that is a huge concern for them. But they don't necessarily need to score a lot of goals. I mean, they might not have to score any goals.
True.
They're in such a comfortable position that you feel Salah missing out would not be a total disaster in terms of the tie. But of course, you want him to be there. And the way that they were dressing up the whole discussion about his fitness levels, it seemed to sound to me as if this had been a huge game for us, we might have been able to get him on the pitch, but because it wasn't, we'll keep him off and see that that he'll be ready for Wednesday. And I think he should be.
I think the crucial thing is it's not just the fact that Salah's so good, but it's that City's weakness is their left back. So I think if he's out, I can see Klopp maybe switching Mane back to that flank and attacking Delph or Danilo or Laporte, whoever plays there, and maybe play someone more defensive on the left flank to guard against Kyle Walker.
Reversing to the derby, how much do you think the experience at Everton has tarnished the Big Sam reputation to the extent that, say, people now consider Alan Pardew, and this might prove to be slightly naive, to be unemployable at Premier League level? How much do you think people in future will look at Sam and go, yeah?
Well, no, because I think Allardyce was always, you know, despite his protestations, I think he was generally seen as someone who would take charge of a side and take them out of the danger zone. And, you know, what he's offering might not be enough for Everton, but he's done his usual thing, hasn't he? So if there's a club struggling next season, well, he's still going to go for it.
Isn't the report this morning that West Brom might be interested in him?
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it might be an escape route for him. If Everton cut ties with him in the summer,
He's willing to go down to the Championship.
Yeah, well, I think with Everton, it's just you still look at them; they're not a Big Sam team either, personnel wise. Yeah. So,
anyone willing to call this a City's game on Tuesday? City going through?
No, I think they would have needed to score that one goal to give themselves a realistic chance. Just don't see it happening.
All right, okay. Well, we'll talk about the other wide open Champions League ties right after this.
Listeners, our partnership with Paddy Power helps to keep this podcast free. And speaking of free, when you join Paddy's Rewards Club, every time you place 5 bets of £10 or more on any sport in a single week, Paddy will give you a free £10 bet the following week. Sign up now at paddypower.com. T's and C's apply. Max £10 bonus per person per week. Specific odds required. Exclude shops and cashed out bets. 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop.
Just been handed a piece of paper with David in the bath written on it. David Priest, you can explain more about that later on and share that with the rest of the class. Real Madrid taking on Juventus this midweek in what is possibly, again, Buffon's last Champions League game. Juve warmed up for this by beating bottom of the table Benevento 4-2 with a hat-trick from Dybala, who suspended. Real Madrid had a 1-1 draw in their Madrid derby with Atletico. Cristiano Ronaldo scored another one. Another Italo-Hispanic clash will see Roma hosting Barcelona. Barcelona 4-1 up from the first leg. Eusebio Di Francesco pointing out that Roma beat Chelsea 3-0 at the Stadio Olimpico, which should be enough to see them qualify. The only thing is they've warmed up for this game by losing 2-0 at home to Fiorentina. Fiorentina, by the way, have now won 6 games in a row and have a 100% record since the tragic death of their captain. They're having a purple patch. Cholito Simeone among the scorers. Brilliant result, that. Barcelona, of course, beat Leganes 3-1, and they are now 38 games unbeaten. All 3 goals from Messi, David Priest. Let's move on then to the other quarter-final, and it's Bayern Sevilla And only 2-1 this. That's narrow. It's tight, isn't it? What's Bayern's record at home? Are they any good, Rafa?
I think they're pretty good, yeah.
Pretty good?
Have they won 16 out of the last 17 or something like this? They have been very good at home in the Champions League. 2-1 away. It was a great result after a very mediocre game. And it left everyone still slightly puzzled as to how good Bayern really are, because they tend to play badly or underwhelmingly and still get results. They've had lucky draws in the knockout stages in the Champions League so far, so we don't really understand, I think, until they come up against one of the favourites, if they do have indeed what it takes to go through. What can be said for them is they have the mentality of winners. You know, they go 1-0 down to Sanchez-Pizjuan. I was in the stadium. The atmosphere was amazing and they look completely unfazed and they just continue and just eventually just their football kicks in and they score fortunate but still deserved goals in the end. And they have this unbelievable depth on the bench. You know, when you can leave out Robin and James Rodriguez and, you know, half the German national team, that will have an impact at some stage. So, again, Tuesday night probably will not offer too many pointers as to how much of a favourite we should see them, but they'll be in the last four. So they'll definitely have a chance.
There's no danger from Sevilla, who've had some pretty interesting comebacks this season.
No,
they did go down 4-0 at Celta Vigo on Saturday.
Sevilla looked like a team who really thrived without the ball. As soon as they were given the ball a little bit and Bayern were playing on the break, once it was 1-1 and Bayern were heading a tie, Bayern played a little bit deeper. Sevilla just basically just didn't know what to do with it. And then physically, they fell completely apart after 60 minutes. I mean, they were down on their legs, whereas Bayern, as I said, just brought on James and brought on Robin and Rafinha. And I can't see them away from home where they haven't been that impressive. The Old Trafford triumph notwithstanding, to turn this around, I think this tie is gone.
OK. In the meantime, Bayern tying up their sixth straight Bundesliga title this weekend with a 4-1 win against Augsburg. Cy Ram asking if there's going to be any opposition for them in the Bundesliga next year.
It's unlikely, because Dortmund have so much of their own problems to sort out. They're in a process of transition. They're hiring new people in the background. They're looking for a new manager, as are Bayern. But Bayern, of course, to a certain extent, it almost doesn't really matter who's on the bench, at least as far as the Bundesliga is concerned. Ancelotti tried his best not to win the Bundesliga, but when they got rid of him, 5-point deficit turned into a 20-point lead in no space of time, and they looked once again untouchable. And Jupp Heynckes has just been going through the motions, rotating players every single game, playing people in weird positions just to keep them happy, like Juan Bernat playing as a winger. And it's a bit depressing for the rest of the league, but what can Bayern really do?
Of course, even if Bayern are running away with it year after year, Bundesliga, one of the other fascinating things about it is the number of incredible young players coming through, and one in particular, Dr. Tom.
Absolutely. Rafa and I had a chat off air about Leon Bailey from Bayer Leverkusen, who looks like he could potentially be one of the best players in the world.
Why is he so special?
It's for a variety of reasons. He's come through an incredible academy in Jamaica, and a guy called Craig Butler runs this academy, and they've 23 youngsters now in Europe in varying leagues. One of his cohorts has just signed for Fortuna Dusseldorf, Kyle Butler. A few others, one has gone to Girona, one has gone to Braga. But I think when you actually look, if you sort of pull back all of the attributes that you'd want for a footballer, and if you want a pure athlete, you know, Jamaica is the place to go. In terms of pace, there's talk that Leon Bailey can do a 10.2 100 metres, for example. He's got 2 feet, he's got a head, he's got a brain. So he's got all of the sort of facets to make it as a player on the biggest stage. And I know there's been lots. I know Leverkusen are very keen to hold on to him, but I know there's been lots of interest from some of Europe's biggest clubs in him.
Similar story to the youngster Bolt, I think it is, at Dortmund. What's going to happen with Leon Bailey? Because we've been waiting and waiting and waiting. He's kind of exploded this year, would you say? Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. His second half of the season, along with the whole club, they've been not quite as been prolific. I think they had 5 games without a goal in the last 8. But yeah, he's had an amazing season, arguably the most exciting sort of breakout star of the season. And it really is, as Tom said, just a question of can Leverkusen sell themselves to him with maybe getting into Champions League, saying, you know, just don't make that move too early. You don't want to be sitting on the bench somewhere at a big club.
How old is he?
Be a regular.
20. And the other thing, James, on the point that Rafa was talking about there, we're very excited at Football Manager HQ because we have the Bundesliga from next year, the first time we've ever had it in the game. So if you actually want to see someone else other than Bayern winning the league, that might be your only way of doing it.
Right, we'll get Ian McIntosh to play as Bayern.
The easier way. That's probably a much easier way, yeah.
So, okay. Well, anyway, so there's a terrific top four battle going on in Germany, quite an interesting relegation struggle for the playoff spot, at least. There's other interesting top. If you're a fan of seeing who's going to be in the Champions League next year, it's tight in Serie A as well. Obviously, Juve and Napoli, the top two. Behind them, you've got Lazio and Roma, with Inter just 1 point behind them. So those three within 1 point. And the derby coming up next weekend between Lazio and Roma. Ooh, we'll be talking about that more.
The last derby in Italy was really exciting.
Yeah. All right. But anyway, we'll talk more about that in Golazzo, where Rafa won't be there and we can talk freely without snide interjections and stuff. And Portugal, that's a proper title race. Yeah. Six games to go. Benfica and Porto just 1 point apart. Are you across this, Michael?
Yes, and it's Benfica-Porto next weekend on Sunday, so that's a huge game.
Wow.
With not many, you know, big title races in Europe. I think that's one of the games of the season.
And you could see that on some... What's that channel called? Free Sports?
Called Free Sports, which is somewhere on your Sky... subscription.
A huge game you're just pointing out, Rafa, in Germany as well next
Schalke
weekend.
Schalke Dortmund, the Revier Derby, second against third.
What happened last time they played?
4-4 after 4-0 lead.
Game?
Yeah. You were hoping it was really boring, weren't you?
No. Rafa, I
as payback.
I'm a fan of football.
It's also first versus second in Holland. PSV can wrap up the title if they beat Ajax. If Ajax win, then it's kind of game on. So Sunday's a big day of you're slightly lesser football league, shall we say, but ones with a good title race.
Yeah, speaking of which, how about Ligue 1? Great title race there. There's only 1 point, but in the Champions League places, Dr. Tom, only 1 point between Lyon and Marseille. And I mention this really only as a way of segueing into two things. One, PSG only drawing at the weekend. Did you see Cavani's miss? At the 1-1 away at Saint-Etienne. Extraordinary miss. Did you see it, Michael?
Yeah, that was bafflingly bad.
It was the worst of the weekend, wasn't it?
I mean,
a weekend
often,
rich of missed
opportunities. Yeah, often like when you get a bad miss, it's like that Welbeck one where the ball's bouncing was a little bit awkward. Uh-huh. But that was just along the floor, open goal. He had a really good sneaky look at the linesman as well, hoping that he was flagged offside.
Yeah.
He was not offside.
Worse than Carno's. I didn't see this one. Was it worse than Carno? Remember,
that was bad.
Yeah,
That maybe takes it. But, you know, Edson's got a fine catalogue of his own. But the other thing I was going to mention from Ligue 1 was a very exciting game between Lyon, who just sneaked back into the top three and thus the Champions League positions. They beat Metz 5-0. Memphis Depay, remember him? He set up four goals and scored the other. Pretty, pretty good. All right. Well, I bet you're hungry for more Euro chat. So how about, in a second or two, with the Champions League looking pretty much settled, we have a quick look at the Europa League quarters. Wake up, Arsenal fans. Thursday night football time. Arsenal making the trip to Moscow. They're 4-1 up against CSKA Moscow. But Dr. Tom, I put it to you, and I think you were at the first leg of this, weren't you?
I was.
So I put it to you that
I
having
knew the one.
So the second leg against Milan, the second leg against Östersund, they did their best to reopen the tie to mess it up, and they've gotten away with it so far. Is there any danger that it might not work out for them this time?
Potentially. I think you look at their history going to Moscow, they've never travelled well there. And this is aside from any of the political issues that we're dealing with on top of all of that. It was a strange game, actually. I thought Mesut Ozil was incredible in that game. But again, he got a lot of space and he got a lot of the ball. But that Ramsey goal was something special in a week where we've had a lot of special goals.
Yeah.
When I was actually looking at Šeška, the situation there, they were, you know, they never looked like a team that were 4-1 down. They were playing very, very well, really tidy free kick, reminiscent of your mate Beppe Signori in terms of no run-up and obviously top corner straight away. They're a talented team. I think, you know, if they scored early, Arsenal could be rattled. But, you know, overall,
I think they have enough to go through.
All right, luckily Arsenal doesn't have a defence that's easily rattled, Dave. Here's a question from Alex. Is Skodran Mustafi, pound for pound, the worst defender in the Premier League?
We were discussing this, Parisi and I, and I'll let him come in on the latter element, but he always seems to get himself into a position where he has to dive in, and he's very good at diving in and last minute ditch tackles, but when you're a defender and you're a defender at that level, you shouldn't be getting yourselves into that type of position consistently.
Yeah, there's two types of relaxed defender. There's a Baresi relaxed defender, there's a Mustafi relaxed defender. The goal in yesterday was a prime example of that, and he tries to turn around and blame Petr Cech when it's clear the communication is from Cech to clear the ball, and he tries to let it go back to Petr Cech, and who's it nipped in? Was it Charlie?
It was Shane Long.
Shane Long, sorry, yeah. Shane Long nips in as well.
Didn't want to say and the giraffe there, but yeah.
But it's just typical of Arsenal defenders just to not defend the ball when they should do.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's with some defenders, especially at the top level. It's sometimes it's beneath them just to defend the goal and kick the ball away.
Mm. What is it with Shane Long though?
He's incredible in that he just never really scores, but he always scores against big teams.
Yeah,
and I think that was his second goal this season.
Yeah.
And I think if you had a hybrid of Shane Long and Robbie Keane, you would have had one of the best strikers in the world. He's incredible.
Yeah, I'm not sure you would actually, Dr. Tom.
Well, it's what's Robbie Keane at international wise? One more than Gerd Muller, I think.
Is he?
So
maybe you would. Arsenal with a 3-2 victory on Sunday against Southampton. Quick word on Southampton, Mike. I bet you were all over this game, were you?
I was watching it from Stamford Bridge because I was at Chelsea. I thought Southampton played well, actually. I mean, after a dreadful performance against West Ham last week, Hughes changed system, went five at the back. I thought Long, he did look very bright. His runs were good. They had Romeo in the centre of the pitch, who I think has to start for them because he's the kind of player you need in a relegation fight. Yeah, they were much improved. Their fixtures are really tough, though, from here, Southampton, so I think they're struggling.
We're talking bad defensively with Mustafi, but I thought Southampton were awful.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think, you look at the goals they've conceded. Jack Stevens, it might be a bit harsh on him if seeing this, but it's a bit of a blessing that he's going to be missing, I think, because I think he's a bit of a liability. Yesterday, he got caught. He caught pressing too late. He got caught in between the bottles, just played down the side of him, and all the rest of the defenders are playing everyone onside. Suarez as well, the back stick. You need your defenders at least going to try and head the ball. He just ducks out of it. Claimed he was pushed in the back, moans to the referee for about 5 minutes afterwards. And if you're not going to even make an attempt to win the ball, then you don't deserve to win games like that.
You're not having that, are you, David?
It makes me very, very incensed.
Right.
Isn't it strange that six games before the end of the season, there's absolutely nothing to play for in the top third of the league?
Well, there is. There's the race between Newcastle and Everton. There's Burnley getting into Europa League spots. European football for the first time.
As I said, absolutely nothing to play for.
Oh, come on, Rafa, the romance. European giants at Turf Moor.
What race between Newcastle and Bournemouth?
Well, just, Newcastle are now only 3 points behind Everton. Yeah.
But Everton are ninth.
Well, yeah, but Newcastle up in the top half. I mean, I think a lot of people thought that Newcastle were going to be in the top half of the Championship next season, not...
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, they've done really well. Burnley have done tremendously well, but there is not a single fixture that will have any relevance of what's happening in terms of the positioning up top, unfortunately. Micah said he went to Chelsea and we were just talking about Arsenal. These are all meaningless games, really, which is quite weird.
How was it at Stamford Bridge, Michael?
To be honest, Chelsea played much better than I thought because, with nothing to play for, Chelsea have a track record, really, of switching off and shutting down and acting like they don't really care. And I think that there's a feeling that their manager feels that way as well. But I thought they were quite bright. I thought Hazard was exceptional. William was good. Morata was frustrating because some of his link play was really good. He scored two goals that were disallowed for offside. They were correctly disallowed for offside. I think he should have timed his runs much better. West Ham were a bit meek, really. I thought after their win over Southampton, I thought they could have been a bit bolder. But Hernandez...
Stamford Bridge, not bad, though. And it's a nice combination.
It was
Hernandez,
a good result. I think Chelsea should have been out of sight before West Ham got back in the game.
Oh, yeah.
But it was nice to see Hernandez scoring. Just because I know he's limited in what he does. But I quite like players who just excel at one thing. And, after the game, David Moyes was saying, any player in the league, you want that ball to fall to Hernandez. And I don't think he's far off saying that, actually. He's just so clinical. If you look at his record this season, I think he scores every 185 minutes or something. So mm-hmm. pretty much a goal every game when you, you know, average it out like that. Yeah. He does get goals. And they don't start with the traditional centre-forward. They play Arnautovic, who's a good player up there. But he was really isolated and he just needed some kind of support. 3 minutes of support and he sets up Hernandez.
Did you think that was a penalty? The Kante challenge?
No.
To be honest, I didn't even see a replay. From my angle, which was not a good angle, it looked like a good tackle. But
good save from Joe Hart, by the way.
A few good saves, actually, yeah. Doing what he should be doing.
Which was your favourite save of the weekend, David?
Oh, I'd go for Karius, really. Uh-huh. Because I just like his continued sort of great form and repaying the faith that he's been shown. And he just looks a different keeper. He looks more comfortable, regardless of the save he's making. Just his whole demeanour looks good.
Thursday night, Dr. Tom, you were wondering about the other quarterfinals, yeah? We mentioned Arsenal and their trip to Moscow. Lazio are going to be at Salzburg. That's nice, in Austria, lovely city. Lazio 4-2 up after an absolutely thrilling performance in their first leg at the Stadio Olimpico. Simone Inzaghi's side continuing to surprise. And as I mentioned, Rafa, their derby with Roma coming up next weekend. Leipzig will be visiting Marseille. Leipzig 1-0 up. So that's quite tight.
Quite tight, and they got a little bit lucky. Mm-hmm. Saw the game. Marseille had a lot of chances, hit the bar. And Leipzig got a great result, but perhaps were a little bit fortunate going to the Côte d'Azur with a clean sheet. But they've given themselves a great chance. I mean, this is their first ever season in Europe. It's only their second ever season in the top, at top level of football. So they've done okay.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else not find it a bit strange that there hasn't been that much media coverage of the fact that there's two clubs owned by Red Bull at the same stage in the same competition?
Salzburg have nothing to do with Red Bull whatsoever, as UEFA have told us.
And a long silence ensued. They kind of do, though, don't they, Rafa?
Well, the badge just look weirdly similar. I don't know if that is just a coincidence. But, I mean, the sad thing for Salzburg fans is actually that Red Bull have cut their ties to a certain extent.
Oh, have they?
They've stopped funding to the same amount. Legally, they're no longer the owners of the club. There's, of course, an argument that they're as sponsors and as the people behind the scenes are still in control of the club. And I think it's fair to say that UEFA are hoping that one of the two will get knocked out, so you won't have that that problem of the two of them coming up against each other. But from a Salzburg point of view, they're actually quite upset with what has happened because they used to be the dominant team in Austria. And it's no longer a given, and all their best players are off to other RB-controlled teams. So it's not great for them.
Mm, interesting.
Salzburg have a really interesting coaching team in Marco Rose, who was a former teammate and player under Jurgen Klopp at Mainz, grew up under the Wolfgang Frank regime, and René Maric, who is basically Austria's Michael Cox, started a blog on tactics and then got a gig coaching with Salzburg's under-19s as an assistant coach when they won the Champions League. And now he's the assistant coach of Salzburg.
Michael, is that something you'd like? Is that a career path you'd enjoy?
No, I met him a couple of years ago and he's far ahead of anything I can provide in terms of coaching. Yeah, I mean, his blog was very good, but, you know, he was a coach with a blog rather than just a blogger,
just a boy with a blog.
Like the same way that after Benitez got sacked from, was it between Liverpool and Chelsea, maybe, he started his own tactical blog.
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't
blog.
He? Yeah.
But I must say it wasn't that good, really.
Was it not?
No.
What kind of thing did he say? What didn't you like about it?
Didn't think it provided much insight, to be honest.
How many, like, did they do chalkboards and stuff like that?
Yeah, it was kind of like breakdowns of matches and then just occasionally, like, he'd put up stats of Liverpool's record of conceding goals from corners during his time there to deny the fact that the zonal marking system didn't work.
Fact exclamation mark at the end of each one.
yeah, exactly.
The best one of those that I've ever come across is a guy called Washington Rodriguez, who actually
He presented Mesa Redonda, which was the Brazilian equivalent of Match of the Day. And he's the only person in real life who actually looked like one of those Bo Selecta masks as well.
Mm.
And this guy ended up as the coach of Flamengo.
Really?
From just being presenting a show, no coaching experience. And that's when they had Romario and Savio.
No.
Yeah. How did that go?
Not very well, but he actually got another stint, so they hired him twice.
Aldo Agropis came up actually last week on Golazzo. Aldo Agropi was a TV opinionista in Italy and was given the Fiorentina job and took them straight down from about fifth on the table.
It's like Alan Shearer.
Well, I suppose. Now, the other Europa League quarterfinal this week is Sporting hosting Atletico Madrid. Sporting 2-0 down after the first leg at the Wanda Metropolitano. You probably saw the fallout from this, did you, David? So they went down after 23 seconds. Diego Costa put Coco through after a horrendous error from Sebastian Coates. Coates had a nightmare game, as did Freddy Montero, who missed an absolute sitter right at the end. And the Sporting president, Bruno Di Cavaglio, was so incensed that he said a lot of stuff on social media. The players then responded on social media. And there was a story going around that 19 first-teamers had been suspended. Can you have 19 first-teamers?
Yeah.
Anyway, but that turned out to not be true. They didn't suspend them. They played this weekend. They beat Paso de Ferreira 2-0 and they're lying third, etc. and so on. But anyway, they have the second leg to try and turn that around.
Listeners, if you want to combine your knowledge of the footy with your knowledge of the footsie, then you need to get yourself over to the Football Stock Market Football Index. Football Index is a new way to profit from your knowledge of the Premier League, League One, Serie A, La Liga and beyond. Buy and sell players, build a portfolio, earn dividends and sell at a profit. Because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can try Football Index and trade up to £1,000 entirely risk-free. Just head to footballindex.co.uk, enter the promo code TOTALLY, and if you don't love Football Index, you'll get a full refund with their 7-day money-back guarantee. Download the app or play online at footballindex.co.uk and become a football trader today. T's and C's apply. You must be over 18. Deposit required and please trade responsibly.
There's more Premier League to discuss, but only after we tackle one or two things like the Football League show, which is returning on Tuesday. And no doubt there'll be a lot of discussion about when Wolves went to Cardiff on Friday night. Ruben Neves with a screamer. Neil Warnock with a screamer. Why was he so upset?
Well, I think it's what wasn't shown on TV was that when the final whistle went, he went across to shake Nuno's hand, and he's off celebrating, doing his David Pleat impression, which he's quite entitled to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was a very important game, but obviously Neil, being the gentleman that he has been over the last 30-odd years, he didn't quite like that.
Right.
The good thing about that was, you know, the camera footage where Warnock's repeatedly telling him to F off. The thing I like is after the final F off, the camera pans back and suddenly Nuno Espirito Santo looks miles away, doesn't he? Like he's really followed. He's only just got the message. And then suddenly he's like 15 yards away.
It's the new Dan. Dan is going, Neil, Neil.
So there are all sorts of drama in that game, as you know, that saw in stoppage time with penalty misses by Cardiff. And that was their first defeat in 14 anyway. They'll be tackling that on the Football League show. Quick update, though, for anyone who doesn't manage to catch that, David, on the Sunderland comeback. How's that going?
Sunderland comeback?
Yeah.
It's not going very well.
Oh, OK.
It was, it was short-lived.
Right. A 1-1 draw with Leeds, so they are same points as Burnton, who are bottom? Wow, it's tight at the bottom of the Championship, then.
There's a race to get the bottom, yeah.
Right. Yeah. OK.
Barnsley got a good result the weekend, though.
Did they?
It might lift them out of trouble, but
they beat Sheffield United 3-2.
They did, yeah. It was a very good game, that one.
Okay. How's any word of a Sunderland takeover?
There is lots of words.
Yeah,
go on, Tom.
I think from the club's perspective, there's a lot of interest, but it's a question of what sort of haircut Ellis Short is willing to take in terms of his investment. So he still wants some money back, but I think he's lost interest in the club, and I think everyone is aware of that. There's been lots of media speculation. Niall Quinn is coming back to the club, apparently for about his fifth time, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I think the club will be taken over, but
everyone's waiting, as David mentioned, probably for the inevitable to happen and for them to go down, and then someone else will probably take over the reins.
Didn't we say this, though, when they were in the Premier League, everyone was waiting for them to go down? And
well,
how many times
did I can tell you that there was a very, very good offer put in for Sunderland when they were still in the Premier League, and it was agreed, and then the goalposts were moved. So I think it was very close to a takeover there. Obviously, you know, when you're talking about hundreds of millions versus, you know, tens of millions, there's a lot more people that can work in that ecosystem. So I think a club with Sunderland, you know, to stop the rot, the potential is huge. The supporter base is massive. Mm. You know, the facilities are incredible. They're all Premier League facilities. So I think that someone will take that over.
Does it hamper them that there's another club not far away that's also up for sale?
Not now, under the circumstances.
Why? Because they're different markets now.
Yeah, they're different markets and they're different valuations. So
what is the latest on the Newcastle
sale? Again, there's a huge amount of interest again in Newcastle, because I think a lot of people were waiting in the wings to see what's going to happen in terms of them staying in the Premier League. They're all but safe at this stage. It would take something crazy to happen for them to go down. You were talking about, you know, they're potentially, you know, going to finish in the top half of the table.
Well, yeah, as Rafa was pointing out, they might even beat Everton to ninth.
He seems extremely interested in that. But that's another point, and that's something that I was going to say at that moment in time, that we're looking at this from a supporter's perspective, but from an ownership perspective, that means everything. And it's one of those, people always say, well, if you're a smaller team in the Premier League, why aren't you going for the FA Cup or the league? And the only reason for that is they just want to stay in the league, because you're talking about minimum 90 million quid, probably for a club that's outside of the relegation zone. Wherever you finish, you're close to 100 million that you're going to get there versus 5 million below. So it does mean a lot in terms of from an owner's perspective, but it from a supporter's perspective or from a, you know, a neutral's perspective, it mightn't mean so much.
How much is each place worth now?
I think it's in around £2 million per place, yeah.
Well, I understand you're saying that those £2 million are worth a lot to the owners.
The £2 million isn't, but staying in the division is.
Oh, yeah, no. I never doubted that. Yeah. I doubted that the race for ninth was particularly exciting.
What Tom was saying about there being a lot of potential, some there is, but at the same time, there's so much. It's such a mess behind the scenes.
At Newcastle?
No, at Sunderland.
Oh, right.
The fact. Both. But there have been people willing to come in and talk, but they've been put off very early by talking to the owner. But he hasn't sold the club at all. When he's went into these meetings, he's kind of just sort of slagged the fans, slagged the fan base, slagged the managing charge, slagged the players, slagged the infrastructure of the club. When really he's been there long enough to be responsible for all of that. And now you've got William O'Brien putting a consortium together. It should go through from what I've been told. But the delay has been that win at Derby. It was just giving them a little bit of a glimmer of hope. It might have changed the sums of money exchanged. But this even if a takeover happens, because of the amount of debt, or was it three figures, well, nine figures? So,
it's in around 120.
Yeah, I think 60 of that's probably about Ellis Short, so he can do that what he wants. So it might be less, but still going to be a huge problem for whoever takes over.
All right, we'll talk more about all this kind of thing and a bit more on Newcastle a little bit later on. Totally Football League show coming up with Ian McIntosh on Tuesday. WrestleMania 34 gets a look in on our brand new Parts Unknown podcast. You can search for that on Acast, iTunes and everywhere else you get your pods for wrestling fans. David, your happiest memories of Sunderland were being in the bath with your other, with your teammates.
Well, I didn't say there were. I was asked this question by Ben, talking about communal baths.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So then I just happened to mention that when I was apprentice, the best part of the day was actually when you'd finished training, you'd finished cleaning all your pros' boots, you'd finished cleaning the whole of Roker Park. We used to clean one of the baths up, fill it up, have a big pot of coffee, big pot of tea, bring in a tray full of sandwiches, and we used to sit there for an hour just sitting chatting.
And eat them in the bath?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And honestly, it was the best part of the day. It was, forget going out and drinking and these bonding sessions. That's when real bonding was made.
I can imagine.
Is this you trying to sell thinking Sunderland? Top Gun.
Is that when it all went wrong, when they took the baths away?
Well, they did say it was because of sort of...
health and safety.
Health and safety, yeah.
Really?
But, yeah, I think that's been disproved.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
I don't know.
All right.
What was the water temperature like?
Did you keep it topped up?
Yeah, always keep it topped up. Always. Lots of bubble bath as well. That was important.
Lots of bubbles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not there was no sort of...
What?
Yeah, go on.
Hanky panky.
Yeah, next one. No, I wasn't going to say that. I mean,
no, it's
I mean,
good
there,
healthy...
there might have been, I just didn't know about it.
Yeah, but nothing... You know, it's good, healthy fun. I can imagine.
Which I take offence to, really.
Good,
can
clean fun.
Exactly. And I imagine, were we to be sitting, you know, immersed in warm water...
Again.
With a, again. Just imagine what a free flow of ideas there would be. Sadly, we're not. Maybe you're listening in the bath, listeners, in which case, hello to you. Mm-hmm. Now, all those Premier League games which Rafa's so excited about, the ones down at the bottom are quite exciting, though, aren't they, Rafa?
Yes.
Let's talk about those a bit. Hey, you've got... we mentioned Newcastle's off-field business, but on-field... Wowzers, going to the King Power Stadium, a 2-1 win there in Leicester. That's three victories in a row. A lot of people asking on Twitter, A, should he get manager of the year ahead of Mr. Pep Guardiola? And B, is there any chance that Newcastle can hang on to him? Where's he going to go?
I think it depends a lot on what happens with the club, because I think he was very frustrated going into the season, worked miracles, I think, to a certain extent, but doesn't want to rely on his ability to work miracles every single season. As a good manager, you want to coach good players and a club that helps you rather than is the biggest obstacle to your success. So I'm sure he's set himself some kind of deadline to see if this situation is not resolved, then I'd be willing to listen to other offers. And there was, I think, today a story about him going to Spain.
I don't think he'd be too desperate to go. I mean, he's got that connection with the fans, similar to what he had at Liverpool. Obviously, it's different circumstances. But it's, he finds it hard to let go of England. I think, didn't his family stay here behind when he left?
Right,
His daughters are still living in England. So I don't think he'd be in too much of a rush. If he can see some light at the end of the tunnel, he thinks something's going to change, then possibly he could stay. Because, I mean... Yeah.
What about this manager of the year idea, Michael?
No,
do you think it's that impressive what he's done?
I think he's done an excellent job with a pretty poor squad, despite his poor blogs that I mentioned earlier. No, I think if you're looking for an outsider, then we shouldn't underestimate what Dyche has done, just because Burnley have been up there all season. I mean, there's only 5 points behind Arsenal with an incredibly low budget compared to those clubs. I'm not one of those who thinks he necessarily deserves a job at a better club, because I think there's question marks about his whether he can coach the attack in a different way, but he's done a fantastic job with the resources there.
Okay, and as we mentioned, as it stands, they're heading for Europa League action next season. Wow. Last had European games in 1967 when they reached the quarterfinal stage of the Intercities Fairs Cup. They'd previously been in the quarterfinals of the European Cup.
I think I'm right in saying that because there's been a slight rearrangement of the process, they'd have to start really early in the Europa League, at end of July.
Ooh.
The kind of thing that someone like Dyche, I can imagine.
Could be a poison chalice, do you think?
Maybe. It'd just be nice if... I always find it frustrating when clubs don't take it seriously when they get into Europe.
Mm.
Remember Aston Villa a few years ago, West Ham as well. All claret and blue clubs.
True.
It's a tremendous achievement for Burnley and Sean Dyche, and for Bournemouth, in fact, because they tend to get ruled out every single year or written off. And yet again, on a very small budget, they've done tremendously well.
All right. And they are the comeback kings of the Premier League. They've picked up 18 points from losing positions. They were playing Palace, though, who are the serial bottlers, the serial throwers away of Leeds, poor things.
Mm. It's all down to Roy Hodgson not making subs, apparently.
Is that right?
That is the theory.
Michael, care to comment on that?
Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, he's got so many injuries, so you can kind of feel sorry for him, because you look at the bench and, to be honest, they're players you often haven't heard of. I mean, presumably Hodgson has, but, they are downgrade on quality every time they bring on a sub, so he has to balance that with fresh legs. So,
Although they look better without Benteke inside this weekend.
Yeah, they did. I mean, that's been their problem, really. I mean, they've created a lot of chances this year, And with Benteke, you think sooner or later it was going to click, but if anything, it seems to have got worse with those misses against Liverpool last weekend.
Yeah. This Zaha lad, he looks tasty.
He's a really, really good player, Zaha. I mean, I think along with Mahrez, the best player outside the top six in the Premier League this year.
Okay.
And I kind of hope they can hang on to him, really. I think this year could be the one where he moves. Obviously, he went to Manchester United, didn't work out, so maybe personally he'll be a little bit afraid to leave. But he's got a really good connection with the fans that I don't think you see that much at Premier League level. With a player like that, often, you know, the fans have a connection with a kind of long-serving right-back who's a little bit of a cult figure, but he's their best player and they absolutely love him. And I just really enjoy going to Palace and watching him. I think he's fantastic.
All right. Palace 3 points above the drop at the moment. It is West Brom, who are 10 points from safety. Stoke 4 points from safety now after their defeat at home to Spurs. Southampton, we mentioned before, they're 3 away from survival. Who scored the goals for Spurs? Was it ever decided, Rafa?
I think one goal was clear enough, yeah. It's about the other one where the issue is. Eriksen got the first one. Second one, by Harry Kane's account, came off his shoulder. And I think it's become now, after forensic match of the day examinations, become kind of accepted wisdom that he did get a touch.
But I think the Premier League is still giving it to Eriksen.
Well, the dubious... goal panel, I'm sure, will meet at some stage.
Will they meet?
Yeah.
I think
that is the reason for their existence.
Do they actually exist?
They do exist.
Okay.
Yeah, they do exist.
Have you ever met them?
I have not met them because their identities are being kept secret so that people like Harry Kane can't phone them up and say...
Because
wouldn't
he?
Well, he would, because today apparently there was a quote I saw in the paper that said, "I'm swearing on my daughter's life that I got a touch."
Oh, I feel like he's going to chain himself to some railings or something, really. It's a bit unedifying, isn't it, or not?
Well, yeah. I think it's quite sweet in a way that it means so much to him.
Yeah, but I've seen this one that he could actually appeal it.
He could appeal the awarding of the goal?
Yeah.
What, the European Court of Justice?
No idea.
Right.
It could prove crucial in the Golden Boot. I mean, he's a long way behind. If Salah's injury is bad, then he has a habit of scoring about...
He's not that far. What is he,
in the last
five goals behind, I think, is he?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Well, could be six. But
it's five. Without the goal.
Okay. Without the goal. So, yeah, four.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate why he'd want it, but when he gets it, he takes it away from Eriksen, no? So...
Yeah, but Eriksen doesn't mind.
If he's on a goal bonus, he might.
Well, there you go.
I would mind.
Harry Kane can give him part of his bonus back.
Yeah. I was on a clean sheet bonus. But only for certain amounts, sort of. It was at every five. Got
the old,
at some clubs, yeah.
Okay.
No, just one.
Chilavera goal bonus.
Yeah. I did get an assist once.
Did you?
Yeah, one for a header.
Did you? How did that happen?
I don't know if I...
What was the game?
Before. It was Silkeborg against Vila, relegation battle. I'd already given the goal away. We were 1-0 down. Went up the last minute. Corner. Big man up front. Just stick it on me. Nodded down for somebody half volley into the goal.
Redemption.
Yeah, nice. Brilliant.
Was that something you'd practiced?
Never. I've done it once before when I was at Darlington. Big games we're talking about here, no? It was Scunthorpe against Darlington. And we were 1-0 down. So I made a beeline for the other end. But the guy taking the corner kick didn't see me and didn't wait. So I got the halfway line. Put the ball in. The counter-attacked and scored behind him.
David, that's awful.
I mean, we were getting beat 1-0. It was a last game of the season or something like that. I didn't care, really.
All right. Also this weekend, there was West Brom's 1-1 draw with Swansea and a 1-1 draw between Brighton and Huddersfield, Michael. Another own goal in that game?
Yeah, a bit of an unfortunate one. Hit the post and hit the goalkeeper. Hit Lussel. And went in. I think, to be fair, those two sides deserve a bit of credit as well. Brighton and Huddersfield came up, no Premier League experience, you know, in terms of the club, but also in terms of their playing ranks. And I've never really been in danger of going down. They've never really flirted with the... I mean, Huddersfield have always been just above the drop zone. And they've both played quite a good football. I think they've got their own identities, their own styles. Two managers have been very firm and insistent in how they were going to play and stuck to that. So... good luck to them.
Okay, they're 4 points above the drop at the moment, level with Swansea, who managed a point away at West Brom. Or maybe we should say West Brom managed a point at home to Swansea as it ended an 8-game losing streak. Darren Moore beginning his interim spell on the Baggies bench. Dr. Tom, you advised on the Chinese takeover, of course, at West Brom. Did you advise on anything else, ask producer Ben, such as sacking Pulis and hiring Alan Pardew, or taxi policy in Barcelona, any of those things? How much of your handiwork is this?
Unfortunately not. But I did work with Mark Jenkins, who was Jeremy Peace's chief executive. Mm. And obviously he left the club because he was very much Jeremy's right-hand man. And they obviously brought in John Williams and his team, and they're now gone, and Mark Jenkins is now back as chief executive.
Ah.
So read what you want into that.
Mm. But and complaining that there's no money left.
Yeah, and he's still very close to Jeremy. So you might have a situation, you know, if they go down, if/when they go down, that the Chinese owners mightn't necessarily want to be there anymore.
Okay.
And we might have a return to the status quo.
Right, they might take it away from the Chinese in an ironic twist of convention.
What about Darren Moore getting the job full time?
It's a tough one to call. You know, traditionally, their methods, particularly when Jeremy was running the club and when Mark was there, they tended to go for very, very good coaches. So, you know, traditionally, they were appointing people that had done a brilliant job coaching behind the scenes, but they didn't have managerial experience. So they went for the continental, you know, Rafa's familiar style of the director, sporting director and a coach. So, you know, good luck to him. You know, he's it's a little bit like what you were talking about earlier on with United when they were 2-0 down. There isn't that much pressure on him because nothing is expected. So if he can produce something, but I would say, and we were talking about managers, like you look at the Championship, it's just getting more and more competitive and more attritional. And there's more and more money been pumped into it because people are just going, trying to get to the promised land of the Premier League. Mm. So whether you can do that over such a long season, that's the...
The number of people coming in think it's an easy route to... A cheaper route to getting into the Premier League riches.
It is and it isn't because, you know, if you get there, fantastic. But pretty much all of the clubs are losing money in that division. They're just pumping money in. The financial fair play that the EFL have brought in, you know, it hasn't necessarily worked the way, it hasn't been policed the way everyone thought it would be. So I think that the Championship is, it's an incredible division, but it's just attritional.
There's one thing that Darren Moore's got in his favour. I played with Darren at Barnsley. He was skipper when I first went there. The one thing he's got in his favour for them going down, I think he's got 5 promotions as a player out of the Championship into the Premier League.
Okay.
So he obviously knows what's needed to get out of that division. He was academy manager, he's head of academy, then he's promoted under Alan Pardew, and he's got the right kind of manner about him. You know, he's the type of person that people see as an authoritative figure. I mean, all right, he can be big and scary at times, but he's a real nice guy and
good in the bath.
Very good in the bath. Right. Very good in the bath. He is.
Okay. Darren.
He's one man who I've seen with my own eyes scare the living daylights out of Roy Keane.
Okay.
We played Ipswich one day, and but we're walking back in the dressing room. We go walk past the Ipswich dressing room. Roy Keane standing outside the Ipswich dressing room, shaking hands with all his players. And as we walk past him, he just goes to Darren Murray. He just goes, "Aye, you whinge a lot for a big man, don't you?" And Darren's took exception to this and sort of turned around. He's the only man who can sort of nullify anybody's advances, aggressive advances, with a stare. He just puts his head down and gives him, we used to call it the brow. As soon as he gives somebody the brow like that, that was it, and it was nothing. He went for him, there was mayhem. There's people coming from, diving over the top of me, trying to get to people, and he's...
just from that?
Yeah. Oh, it was one of those things that, you know, you think that goes on, that very rarely goes on in tunnels or in dressing rooms. People think that happens more often. This was just mayhem. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Wow, did you get stuck in, David?
Well, no, I was just standing there just laughing at people, like, you know what I mean? Like, from the back.
Brilliant. Okay.
That's very good.
Wow. What an unexpected treat that story was.
Listeners, starting up the Totally Football Show was a hairy business. Fortunately, Cornerstone have been with us every step of the way. Why? Because they're in the business of making hairy things smooth, like your face. Cornerstone's award-winning blades will give you the smoothest shave possible, and their range of balms, creams and exfoliators are all environmentally friendly, alcohol-free and suitable for the most sensitive skin. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally to see the range for yourself, get £10 off your first order and have it delivered right to your door. And you'll find out why tens of thousands of men have switched over to Cornerstone.
Well, that's the football then. Time to get those odds from Paddy Power with producer Ben.
Thank you, James. I'm here with Lee Price from Paddy Power. And Lee, let's talk about Europe first of all. It's Man City versus Liverpool. Liverpool 3 goals up. They lost 5-0 when they last went there. Surely they can't do that again. I think they're going to be goals in this one. What are the odds on 4 or more at the Etihad?
Quite probably. City have been uncharacteristically bad the last couple of games. And since the Easter weekend, Guardiola probably felt like hiding in the cave. His side's defensive frailties of last season have been resurrected and they've been ripped apart by Manchester United of all teams and Liverpool. So I expect a goal fest this time. Our odds are very short and there being more than 4 goals in this game. They're just 11 to 10. So expect a thriller. We'll probably get a 0-0.
So Liverpool going through on the night then?
I would say so. You get massively odds on Liverpool going through. So short that's probably not worth betting on them, to be honest.
All right, let's shift focus from the Champions League to the Europa League, where Arsenal are in Moscow. They're 4-1 up against CSKA, having beaten them at the Emirates. Can they really balls this up away in Russia?
Yeah, talk about the fun stopping. That's very un-Arsenal-like, wasn't it? They were clinical, mature, incisive in the first leg. Totally unrecognisable, in other words. We make them favourites to win the away leg too, which I'm not so sure about. CSKA need a 3-0 win to progress, which is a chunky 35-1. If it happened, I think even Arsenal fans would find that hilariously bad. But I wouldn't expect to see it.
Back to the Premier League then. Now, Spurs, they're unbeaten in the league since mid-December. They've had 5 wins in a row. Can they finish second again this season?
I don't think so. They're a huge 1 to 200 to finish in the top four, which is absolutely massive. And they do have a game in hand on Liverpool above them. But that 4-point gap to United does look quite tricky. So with that in mind, we'd offer odds of 4-1 that they finish runners-up this season, which would at least be another accolade for the Spurs trophy cabinet.
And at the other end of the table, Lee, what about the new manager at West Brom? Who's that going to be?
Yeah, if West Brom fans weren't depressed enough already, how's this for next manager shortlist? Mick McCarthy, Dean Smith, Chris Wilder, Michael Appleton, Craig Shakespeare and Paul Cook. Welcome to life outside the Premier League, lads. But in fairness, they're all sensible options and McCarthy has emerged as a favourite, despite being so unloved at Ipswich. He's 15-8 now, having been 10-1 initially. If you thought Tony Pulis was dour baggies fans, strap yourselves in.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. 18 plus only, begambleaware.org, and when the fun stops, stop. That largely wraps things up for that. What is the one game people should watch this week? Rafa, what would it be for you?
Well, I think despite everything we said, City-Liverpool still holds out the most promise of good football, of exciting.
Of being a PSG-Barcelona part two.
Yeah, I mean, if Liverpool score reasonably early, then it might just kind of peter out. But you'd hope that it'll be as entertaining, despite being one-sided, as the first leg was.
Right. Dr. Tom?
I'd like to say something else, but I'm in complete agreement with
CSKA
Rafa
Arsenal,
there.
Perhaps? You never know.
No, I don't think. I think if you're looking for quality and you're looking for pace and the game potentially has everything, you know, you want City to score early and it's the game that all the neutrals will be watching.
Mm. If I just can come in, if you are interested to see the fortunes of Leon Bailey and future Liverpool player Naby Keita, you can tune in Monday night to see Leipzig play Leverkusen.
All right. Michael, David, what game will most be most essential for you this week?
Well, do you know, if you had a loose end and you're around Brackley this weekend, you should go and support Alfred and Town. They're playing Brackley in the Conference North. And National League North, as it is now. And get behind Alfred and then desperately need 3 points.
Okay. And Michael?
No, I'm looking forward to the City-Liverpool game. And I think one possibility is that City could really go for it and be done 3-0 on the counter-attack, as has happened to Guardiola teams in the past.
Wow.
And then there'd be even more of a question mark about his record in those kind of big Champions League games.
Yeah, can't do it without Messi. Yeah. All right, Michael, you've got the bath on. Let's get in there. Listeners, we'll catch you soon. Hope you have a nice time in the meanwhile. Bye.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Gentlemen, are you feeling a bit crap? Well, you're not alone. Everyone does at some point. But the thing people don't realise is just how common it is in chaps like you and me. Last year, 76% of all the suicides in Britain were male. That's 4,287 men, a figure not much smaller than the average League Two attendance last season. On average, 12 men take their own life every single day, meaning that the leading cause of death for men under 45 in the UK is suicide. But that's part of the problem. There's still a strong social stigma around depression and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and seeking help when they need it. That's why we at the Totally Football Shows are working with Calm. They're the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide in the UK. Every day from 5pm till midnight, they provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website and a free magazine packed with the kind of information you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough time, as well as some cracking stuff on comedy, bands, film and, of course, football too. So if you are feeling crap, find Calm at thecalmzone.net for support and some straight-up manspiration.